Out and about for Nutrien here at beautiful Tumby Park. Scott Whitten joins me. Hello, Scotty.
G'day, Paul. How's things, mate?
Very, very well. We're a beautiful part of the world. I'm not quite in Queensland. I'm on my way to Queensland, but I'm on the border, I believe, not far from Tweed Heads.
We're about 3 k's from the border that way, so we're just this side, New South Wales side, in a little place called North Tumbulgum, and that's how Tumby Park got its name. The little village down below the house there is called Tumby, so that's why I named Tumby Park when we brought it, what we did. So, yeah, we're still a New South Welshman here, which is, make sure we highlight that, because when it comes to football, the Queenslanders and New South Wales have a great rivalry.
And you are a Blue?
Absolutely, born and bred, yep.
The Maroons win more than they lose, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know, yeah.
We're Victorians. Victorians are a dark blue, but we, for some reason, barrack for the Maroons. I don't understand how that works. We're not even going to go there. We'll leave that one alone. I said it's a beautiful property. You were wiped out only a couple of years ago through the floods and a lot of work. But you're upkeep and looking after it. But you must be wrapped to get it back to where it is now.
Look, it's only been the last month. The flood was in February this year. So what a bit, 6-9 months ago, whatever that is. But because we've had so much follow-up rain, we've only just basically got the paddocks and the shelters and the fencing and the mud cleaned up, to be honest. It's taken 6-7 months of just, it's been a... And I feel for the people in Victoria as of today in Sydney who are going through flood. It's one of the worst things you can go through, a flood. And we were lucky we didn't lose any livestock. We didn't lose our houses set up on the hill there. But it's a devastating thing, flooding. It really is.
Yeah, the people in... Shepherd and Rupnery Chuka are really suffering. At the minute, I've come from there and it is bad, and unfortunately there's more follow-up rain, like you said, and it's starting to rain now. It was sunshine 2 seconds ago, now it's starting to rain again here. Nutrien, promote people, get the messaging out there about why they do what they do and selling horses and buying horses. You've got quite a few going through the sales this year. The Sydney sale is on the 4th and 5th of March, I must say that. The next week for Brisbane, and then back for the 19th, back to Bathurst. It's going to be, and then Victoria, of course, on 2nd and 3rd, I think it is, of April. 1st and 2nd, actually, of April. So busy, busy month. I met you in New Zealand, and I found out a little bit of a different side to you, if you like. You have a real fascination with the breeding. You're not the sort of person that, oh, I've got money, I'm just going to buy the dearest horses. You have a fair fascination for the breed and knowing what breeds sort of work.
Oh, yeah. Look, I don't know how to explain it, but I just try and identify value. I put a price on a horse. I look at multiple over the last 3, 4, 5 years of different group one winners, different crosses, go back one or two generations, try and, you know, the new stallions coming up, thinking, I think this horse will, you know, it's well known now, but early days had a lot of success with the Sweet Lose out of Better's Delight mares, still having good success. And I sort of pinpoint that. I mean, that's an obvious thing these days, but those, you know, when I first started, I was buying those horses for 6, 8, 10, 12, 15, 20 grand. You know what I mean? So I pinpointed value. Horses like my Ultimate Baxter, he's won 100,000, those sorts of horses. They're all, you know, Sweet Lou out of Better's Delight mares. So just doing stuff like that and not chasing the 100+ thousand dollar horses at yearling sales. I'd sooner spend money on the breeding side if I'm going to, you know, with the betters and the captains and the better stallions, and put more money into that rather than chasing a 100+ thousand dollar yearling at a yearling sale.
When you go to these sales, and do you put a budget on a horse? Like if you say, right, well, I think that horse is a $50,000-$60,000 colt or filly, and you stick to that?
Pretty much, yeah. I might go 10% over with what I think. And sometimes I'll get it totally wrong. I might think a horse is worth 40 and it'll sell for 80, and you just think, oh, well, I got that wrong. But a lot of the time I can pick most of the horses that I have left on my list up for what I sort of put the price tag on them to be, yeah.
Our friends in New Zealand, they do a beautiful, brilliant weanling sale, and something I hope happens here in Australia, because turning the dollar around, if you like. But the way the guys at NZB and Bardo, won't mind me mentioning them at all, they run a great show. That weanling sale, I say to people, it's in the right time of year for people to get to New Zealand. It's something very special to go to and witness, isn't it?
Absolutely, yep. And there's great value there. The last few years it has increased significantly, but there's still value there. You can... I mean, there was an Art Major colt that I brought this year for, I think, 40 grand at the weanling sale. Like, if I pinhooked him back through New Zealand's, the main sale this year, he'd be 100,000 plus horse. Now, he's fit, he's healthy, he's straight, he's true, he's correct, and he's there in front of you. You're taking all of that waiting time, the investment, the risk out of it. Going forward with my change of circumstances just sort of recently, I probably will cut back on my brood mares and focus more on buying my 6, 8 or 10 weanlings every year for myself, just to eliminate risk and investment for a longer period of time.
And with nutrient coming into the sale ring, you say about that the pin hooking, they give you that option whether you want to keep them or if you want to pin hook them. And basically, it's one of the criteria of APG was that they had to have an Australian brand on them. So the pin hooking was out as far as getting them from New Zealand and being able to put them back through the sale. Nutrient, they changed that up now, and it makes a good opportunity. And the one thing I think with our industry, the more times $1 can go around, the better off our industry is.
Totally agree. And the other thing we'll see over years to come is our broodmare ban will strengthen the New Zealand broodmares. Overall, I think New Zealand's probably that little bit stronger from the breeding perspective, and I think with Nutrien allowing the New Zealand horses to come through the sales, I mean, there's a couple of fillies that I've brought this year going through. They will make ideal broodmares for someone at some point because they've got great New Zealand bloodlines going back to the Alta Cristianos and the Ahoka Punters that are, all of that. So I think there's a lot of benefits for the Australian industry by allowing those New Zealand horses to come back through.
Right, so the obvious question is going to be, once the sales come around in March, Tumby Park is selling, but they race them, they keep them. You alluded to their change of circumstances. The horses you've got for the sales, they are for legitimate sale. They're not giveaways, but they are legitimately there for sale.
No, exactly right. So we went to the weanling sale this year to buy, half a dozen horses, which we always do, whether to race them or to sell them. And at the time, I was just in negotiation to sell my sort of main business at the time, which has now happened. So going forward, I mean, we've had upward of 100 horses on the books at different times. With the selling of the business and just different circumstances, I just need to be a little bit more, I need to manage things much better than I used to. And having about 50 horses on the books is what we're ideally looking for. And we've got 18 horses going through Nutrient in Brisbane this year. But those six or seven we brought from New Zealand, I brought them with the intention to race them. But all my band will be for sale. No, I'm not keeping, well, all are on the market for sale at a realistic price. Like that Art Major colt, he's a cracking colt. He cost me 60 landed. His reserve will be 70 at the sale. Like, but he's just a stunner. Like he'd be 100,000 plus horse in New Zealand. So they're for sale, but they're going to have realistic prices. And going forward, I just want to keep about six horses a year instead of breed about 8 or 10. Maybe buy six, and that's where we're at. Where at the moment, we've still got in excess of 70, 80 horses.
And you're working on that, and you are legitimately, and you're changing this property up probably to cater for that and make, cut a few of your expenses down as well. You were very forthright and open just there saying about that horse. And I think that's one thing I want to get out there because, as I say, people see certain people as buyers only, buyers and racing horses. You've had a change, and we want to make sure that people are aware that because of the change, that changes your business. Is it, you said there before, we were talking about, you're not sure where you'll end up. Is yearling sales and weanling sales, is that somewhere that Tumby Park could end up being, like the pin hooking and continuing to sort of run a business that way?
Well, yeah, maybe. Look, I don't know, to be honest. I haven't thought that far ahead. But with the big change in our circumstances this year, we're just evolving and I'm trying to get our property fully complete and done by sort of in the next 6 to 12 months because I maybe want to turn this into more of an adjustment and pre-training setup, possibly. That's in the mix. And we've got to manage our racehorse numbers. As I said, we've still got 70 or 80 horses. We've got to get that back down to about 50. And then we've got the 18 yearlings that are coming through. So, there's all these things. So we'll just take one step at a time and see what the next couple of years brings. And it'd be nice just to have, 20 or 30 horses always at the races. And it'd be nice to have 10 nice broodmares and go to the sales each year and buy 10. That'd be ideal.
Number one, have you told your wife how many horses you've had? And if not, are you in trouble after this interview?
No, but she said to me, why are we selling all these horses? And I said, well, we just got to sell a few. She said, well, how many have we got? And I said, oh, about 108. And she just shook her head, but you know what? The last 5 or 6 years, we've been winning 100-odd races every year. We've been getting Group 1 winners every year. We've had a lot of fun. Like, we enjoy harness racing immensely. We're all off to Sydney on Thursday, just to go down and look at our babies work for the going out for the end of their third prep and the semi-finals, the Breeders' Challenge are on. So we just love it. We love racing, yeah.
I want to stay on the yearling sales for 2 seconds, but we're going to actually keep going back onto that racehorse. Do you enjoy the way things have changed over the last few years with competition? Everyone's lifted the bar from NZB. Their bar was always pretty high. Nutrient have come in, they've changed it up. APG, they're not gone. They're going to change. They're going to re-value. Do you enjoy, especially the professionalism and the way that people are preparers and that have changed the way they do things with the yearling sales?
Absolutely. It was about 6 or 7 years ago when I first started buying yearlings. And from where it was 6 or 7 years ago to where it is today, it's remarkable. The professionalism and the way that they've prepared these yearlings, it's incredible. Yeah. So it's evolved immensely. Yeah. And it's all for the good. It's all for the good.
And it's fun as well.
Absolutely. We had a ball, like in New Zealand. We went over there. It was a 3 or 4 day carnival type thing for one yearling sale. We're booked in for the yearling sale when's that? February? In New Zealand. The main sale in New Zealand.
Oh, it's in February. In February. Yeah.
So that's the first cab off the rank. So that's the first book I've got to get through, and then it's straight into the nutrient book. So,
do you reckon the Hilton will stock up on Coronas?
I hope so.
They're in a bit of trouble. Graham Hand, he'll be watching this. He'll be like, yeah, they better. He'll make sure they do it as well. Racing wise, the success you guys are having, there's no mistake by it. I mean, there's a lot of forward planning and. You know, astute picking, I'll say that to you, because you were on the Sweet Lose, were a great sponsor of mine, Woodlands, but you were on the Sweet Lose early. There was a lot of criticisms. You stuck fat. You continued to buy them, even when people were probably a little bit critical. You must be wrapped with the results you're getting, and the wrapped, I would imagine, for Jared Orchin as well.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, as I said, we don't normally buy the $100,000 horses. We look for value. I go through and might have 30, 40 horses on my list at a yearling sale, and then... me and Jared go through and eliminate them and both decide what ticks the boxes, and he'll give me his pros and cons, I'll give his mine, and New Zealand's different, I sort of fly solo there, and we've had a bit of success doing that. But and then once they go from that stage into the system, you know, me and Jared, we work closely, we've got systems, we, as I said, I'm heading to Sydney on Thursday at the end of their third preparation. There's a benchmark that we now have for horses at where they've got to be at the end of their third preparation. I'll go down there on Thursday and watch them work, or Friday. And if they don't meet that criteria, they're, you know, for sale, for lease, or we just move them on. And that's how we now have good success, a good strike rate. We're not wasting money on horses that are only... 50-50. We have a benchmark and a criteria, and we sort of stick to it. Yeah, and Jared's the best judge with that. He'll ring me and say, you know, this one's got a heap of ability, but it's got a bad attitude, and it won't suit you, because I'm big on horses having the right attitude, because you very rarely see a bad horse with a bad attitude win Group 1 races. So, you know, there's all those little things that we have to tick the boxes, and me and Jared work pretty closely with that. We talk most days with the racehorse, not so much most days, but, you know, 3 or 4 times a week on the programming and what horse are in work and about to come back into work and about to spell and where the weanlings and the yearlings and whatever is. But yeah, so, well, we work well together.
Do you enjoy that, and are you a little bit proud of where it's sort of come from? Like, you all of a sudden you've got a benchmark. You know, probably 3 or 4 years ago, I'm tipping your benchmark wasn't as high as where it is now. Are you proud about it and the results that you guys are getting?
Well, you soon set a benchmark when you do a lot of money. Like, everyone thinks that Tumby Park's had a lot of success the last couple of years, which we have, don't get me wrong, but there was 2 or 3 years there where I was probably breeding the wrong horse and then buying the wrong horse, and you can do a lot of money and spend a lot of money over a 12-month period. So me and Jared just sat down, and we both identified what the problem was. You know, we weren't buying the right horses. We were buying the big, bulky, lanky, leggy horses that we knew would make 3- and 4-year-olds but weren't going to make 2-year-olds. So we changed it. Well, and that was my fault more than anything. You know, big, magnificent, muscly, leggy horse would walk past me, and I'd say to Jared, I want to buy that horse. And he'd say, oh, bloody hell, it might go as a 4-year-old. But that was all my fault in the early days. But since then, we just sat down. We've got... you know, those benchmarks and criteria in place, and, you know, me and Jared work well together, and we've basically never had a blue. We've had a few disagreements when Jared used to drive, but that was more from my punting pocket. But we work terrific together, and we get on well, and we work well.
You enjoy it, don't you? Like, and that's the one thing, like, just listening to you there and being so honest about you picking the wrong horses and that, but you actually enjoy it. Like, you have a smile about your face, which is the one thing that I try to get out to people. We've got to be able to enjoy this game. We've got to change the way we think about it. Yeah. Harness racing is going backward if you listen to everyone and let it go backwards, but we have to lift the bar and change it, lift the benchmark, like what you guys are doing.
Yeah, no, and you've got to enjoy it. Like, Honestly, I can't tell you whether I've been harness racing for 12 months, 2 years or 20 years, to be honest. Whilst ever I'm enjoying the horses and harness racing, I'll be in it for as long as I can be. The minute I get sour or I don't like it or something happens, there's no point doing it if you don't enjoy it. But at this point, you know, I'm busting at the seams to get to Sydney on Thursday and Friday to watch the next crop of youngsters, you know, bowl along. We've got a couple of Lazaruses there that Jared just says they're... we've never had horses break in and cruise up and run up as nice on the bit as what these couple of Lazarus colts are. I'm excited to see them. So there's always something happening. We've got the semi-finals, the Breeders' Challenge, Saturday night, and then the Group 1 the week after. So potentially that's happening. I'm in the mix of maybe sending a horse to New Zealand for a Group 1 race. So there's always something exciting. And when you've got the better horses on your books, you're always watching the competition and the other horses, and then you know, Leap to Fame was sensational the other night in the Victoria Derby. Well, we're meeting him next week or Saturday night in the semi-final. So you're on top of all your competition, but it's just good and I love it.
Yeah, he was awesome, actually, Leap to Fame, and I was fortunate enough to see him at Tamworth, which is not that far from here. It's a little way, but not that far. But he is a beautiful horse. You're not going to give it, but what do you look for in, say, like we talked about Sweet Lou there before, first season sires, when you like a horse, what do you actually look for people like, you know, that are trying to learn and trying to probably improve what they're doing? I was going to ask you, is there a smoky first season sire going through the yearling sales? I'm not going to do that because you'll want to buy those potentially and race them on. But what do you actually look for in a stay-in, you know, those first years, couple of years where they're the unknown factor?
Oh, look, you've got to see them physically. Like, the videos and the photos are one thing, but you've got to get to these yearling sales and look at the horses. And once you're there, you don't really need your book. You've got to go and find the right type of horse. They've got to tick the boxes physically. You know, they've got to be straight, true, correct. Instead of buying off the page, that was the mistake we made. It's got to tick all boxes. Whilst they've got to be nice on the page and they've got to tick all those boxes, they've got to be nice types. They've got to be true. They've got to be correct. They've got to be well put together, not too big, not too heavy. It's a balance. And I don't know. There was a gentleman said to me at the Sydney sales a couple of years ago, come and have a look at this horse. It's the most magnificent horse I've ever seen. Anyway, I went and looked. It went for $100,000, this horse, and I didn't like it one little bit. But that's the difference in opinion. He loved it, and I didn't. That horse has gone on to win a couple of races, don't get me wrong, but it was just one of those horses I thought, I'll be surprised.